Hello, friends, and welcome into the Jayhawk Talk Podcast, episode up to 70. The Big 12 got a little more interesting this week. I am Kevin. Join with me, as always, is Andrew. Andrew, how you doing today on this fine Sunday?
You know what, Kevin? I'm doing okay, considering the circumstances. We did drop a game versus Oklahoma State, but it seems like we always struggle in Stillwater. We've still got a firm grip on the Big 12. So, you know what? I'm feeling good about going after number 11 here.
Yeah, I think I am too. You know, everybody in the league has dropped one like this. You know, Oklahoma lost to K-State at home early, and Iowa State obviously losing to Tech. And I don't know, you can look across the league. The league's too good for this not to happen a little bit. And I think everyone still feels pretty good about 14-4 having a really, really, really good chance of winning this league. And KU's definitely got a very good chance to do that. So we will talk a little bit more about the Big 12. We'll have to talk a little bit about that Oklahoma State game, unfortunately. But Andrew, we woke up this morning, the sun was shining, but found news early on, real quick, that a legend in the college basketball world had passed away and also has some serious ties to Kansas. Of course, we're talking about Dean Smith. Tell us a little bit about Coach Smith.
You know, Dean Smith is a legend, as you said, in the college basketball coaching ranks. One of the highest winning percentage coach or winningest coaches in the Big 12, but serious connection to Kansas. He was born here, born in Emporia, and a graduate of Topeka High School. Like someone I know, went to KU and was part of the 1952 national championship team. Then went on into the coaching ranks, coaching at KU, and then on to coaching North Carolina. You know, he retired in the late 90s, and I think he had dementia, so he kind of formally withdrew from the public several years ago, you know, asking his players to come around one more time, and did pass away today. So, you know, even though he was considered a great North Carolina guy, he still was a great Kansan, and yeah, he'll be missed among these parts as well.
Yeah, definitely. I actually met him when I was in high school, as you mentioned, at Topeka High. He came back to be the grand marshal of our homecoming parade there at Topeka High. So that was pretty cool to see that. And then, obviously, as you mentioned, you know, he was a pretty good Kansan, as well as, you know, a North Carolina coach. There's been a lot of coaches from Kansas, man. These big, famous coaches that have really cemented programs like Kentucky and North Carolina. We were talking about Dean Smith, born in Emporia. Eddie Sutton, where's Eddie Sutton born?
He was born in Buckland.
Buckland, there it is.
Buckland, out my way, or my former way. You know, he, you know, coached at Oklahoma State and Kentucky, among a couple other places. Gene Cady, you know, famous Purdue coach. He was born in Larned, out there in western Kansas. Adolph Rupp, we know that. You know, he was born in Halstead. And then Johnny Orr, you know, famous coach at Iowa State, legend at Iowa State, born in Yale, Kansas, down there.
A lot of coaches.
In southeast Kansas. So a lot of the coaches that have the winningest records of all time, you know, have ties to this area.
Pretty cool. Andrew, let's get into some of these games. Let's start with one that was kind of a lot of fun, that Iowa State game on Big Monday.
You cannot hope or wish good things to happen. You go make them happen, because we are in attack mode for the entire 40 minutes. We do that, and we're going to have a fun locker room in about 2.5 hours.
All right, so the Iowa State game, Andrew, a nice win, 89-76 at Allen Fieldhouse, evening the season series at 1-1. What did you think of the game? I know you were in attendance.
You were also in attendance.
I know. I was just throwing it out there.
Right next to me. let's just talk about, in general, games at Allen Fieldhouse. It used to be the loudest game of the season you can anticipate every year would be the Missouri game.
Missouri, yeah.
Then, since Missouri left, it's, you know, you don't have a definitive winner. Like, maybe it's K-State.
Texas,
maybe
sometimes.
Texas.
Yeah.
I think Iowa State has had a pretty good showing in the past couple of years, that they've kind of taken that throne as, this is the game that we get up for the most, And I'm saying that in that we get up for every game. We fill a stadium and we're loud. But if we're going to have to separate between games, is this the one that people get craziest?
You know, you're there more than I am, but the last, I mean, of the ones I've gone to this year, this one was by far the most. I kind of expected it to, just because of the way we played in Ames. I think KU fans felt like, you know, this was a big one. They were kind of on our heels a little bit in the conference. We win this game. We got some separation. So, yeah, I think it was just a big game all around. I think it was just kind of one of those the conditions were ripe for a crazy, you know, crazy Big Monday crowd. You know, I kind of like some of those weekend games, those Saturday afternoon games, when they feel a little bit more important for some reason, because it usually means we're on, you know, CBS or something. And it's closer to the tournament, but for some reason, this one felt like it was going to be a big one, and I think it was.
Absolutely, and I think that the fans definitely helped out. It was loud throughout the whole game, and even at the end when the game seemed like it was over. But let's talk a couple storylines here. I think one of the biggest storylines is that Wayne Selden really showed some life in this game. He was 7-for-12 from the field, went 5-for-7 from the 3-point line. You know, you and I have been complaining a little bit about Wayne Selden throughout the whole season, but I think he's on a turnaround. What do you think?
Definitely from an energy standpoint, he continues to be really good. Defense has been great. I mean, he played awesome defense this week, and, you know, not to fast forward, but he did really, really well in the Oklahoma State game as well. But he still can't finish. I mean, and he can shoot threes right now, which is great. So, honestly, I think, you know, I tweeted this out several times. On offense, he just needs to pass the ball and shoot threes. So he just passed the ball and shoot threes. And I think he's going to continue to get his minutes because he's been making them. But he just can't. He still can't finish around the basket. And he's shooting like almost 30% from two-point range, which is still just incredibly low. I mean, it has to be one of the lowest in college basketball, literally, for the amount of shots that he's taken. But definitely showing signs of life, and definitely you know, earning his minutes, which is something we weren't sure he was doing for a while there.
I think you're right. And I think generally this team kind of feels like a bizarro Bill Self team. If you ask Bill Self, what is your strategy for basketball? He will tell you to get easy buckets and to keep them from getting easy buckets.
Yeah.
You know, that's been his strategy, you know, playing inside out, playing through the post. But that's the opposite of kind of how this team plays. This team plays off of 3-pointers. And they're terrible around the rim, which is the exact opposite of, you know, the teams that Bill Self has had for the past 11 years until now. But, hey, it seems to be working. We're having an okay season. And what I mean by okay is we're having a pretty good season. But let's talk about a couple other things, you know, a couple from the Iowa State game. Big games from Perry Ellis. He had 17.6 rebounds. Kelly Oubre had an almost identical line with 16 points and 5 rebounds. And on the defensive end, we certainly slowed down their transition buckets, at least in the first half, which was very encouraging, because if you wanted to point to one reason of why we lost up in Ames, it was our inability to stop them in transition, you know, either coming off of a missed basket or even a made basket. So that was encouraging. It wasn't the case as much in the second half, but enough for us to get the win.
Yeah, I agree. It was really nice to see. You know, you saw pretty much one big, huge red flag and up in Ames was the way that they defended on transition. And then you see them come back this game and fix it. Like, that's a good sign. And hopefully we see the same sign the way that we are unfortunately not able to break a press right now. Hopefully, as games go on, we see that fixed. You know what I mean? That in practice, obviously, they stressed one particular issue. It came out. They did a great job doing it. So I have a feeling this week we are stressing breaking the press, because the blueprint out there right now is to get up in our face when we still have to go the length of the court, and seems to be working pretty well for the opposite team right now. We should be able to break that press with this team very easily, and we should be able to make them pay for doing it, and we just aren't right now. So that's one thing I'm looking for, but I agree. It was nice to see him, you know, work out some of those things and obviously coach him up.
So after that game, we were able to take a 2-game lead in the Big 12 heading into Saturday's game versus Oklahoma State down there in Stillwater. And unfortunately, we lost the game 67-62. A couple storylines from that. And I think the thing that sticks out the most is just the terrible second half we had. We were outscored 37-21. What did you think of the second half, Kevin? Is it just a bad half? You know, we're never very good in Stillwater. I mean, did we have a shot to win this game?
Yeah, we definitely did. I mean, we're better than them. That was the thing that was frustrating is, I mean, we're a better team than they are, but they played so much better than we did. In that first half, I mean, you and I were talking about it. We were sitting there, again, trying to recreate our win versus Texas at the Turn 2 Lounge at the Hollywood Casino. I think we sat at a different table, so maybe that's our fault. But, you know, the thing we were talking about at halftime, like, man, you know, they were up by 11, whatever, but we just made a whole bunch of threes. I mean, we shot 7 of 9 from 3 in the first half. You shot 78% from three. You better be winning. And you look around and we saw they also had like 11 turnovers at half. That's not very good. I mean, that's really bad. And Self said after the game, you know, we actually didn't play well in the first half at all. We just made shots. And in the second half, you know, kind of the same thing, except you didn't make shots. And obviously they made them pay. But one thing, we were rebounding them 20-9. In the first half, which is a crazy number. And yet we lose the rebounding margin overall at the end of the game, which is just, that's crazy. It was just an awful half. There's nothing else to say other than they played really bad on offense and they played really bad on defense. And, you know, Oklahoma State made them pay.
So are you discouraged by this game, or is this just a road woes that everyone suffers in the Big 12?
I don't know. I guess I'm somewhere in between. I mean, the way that we are still struggling with the press, full court press, is frustrating to me, because I think that we'd seen that now for some time, that that's a, you know, obviously a problem with this team. And yet we didn't really fix it or even look like we fixed it. And then the crazy thing about this team, and you mentioned, we say this, you know, all year, this is not really a normal Bill Self team or whatever, but the extreme lows and extreme highs that this team has is just crazy. I mean, there's no real, you know, if you're looking at a pendulum and you're swinging from side to side, like, this can go all the way to zero and all the way up to 100. There's no like 20 and 80. Like, this team can go so bad at times and go so good at times. It's kind of crazy. And there's, you would maybe think that if it's like a really young team or something, that would be the case, but you know, there's some guys in here that have played some minutes. Wayne Selden and Perry Ellis and Mason all on the court. I mean, they've played enough to you can't really blame youth, but they're just as big a part of it as everyone else. So I don't know. It's fun. It's intriguing. It's crazy to watch. It's good entertainment, but kind of scares you a little bit at the same time.
You know, there were a couple highlights to talk about. You know, 3-point shooting continues to shine for this team. We shot 10 for 20 with a couple, you know, bad ones at the end. So, I mean, this team can shoot. If there's one thing you can say about this team, it can shoot better than any other team we have. But with that in mind, let's talk about the performance of the week.
Here's the three.
All right, Andrew, I think we got a couple options here. Obviously, we talked about Wayne Selden having a nice game. Actually, you know, pretty nice week overall with his two performances. And Brandon Green, I don't even know what to say about this guy anymore. I mean, he keeps making a lot of three-pointers.
You know, at one point, he had made 14 of 18.
That's insane.
You know, he missed the last two down there in Stillwater, but still ended up shooting 3 for 5, which, you know, pretty good. That's 60%. But it's pretty rough when you shoot 60% from three and your percentage in the Big 12 goes down. So when you shoot 60% and your percentage goes down, those are pretty good problems to have.
I agree. And, you know, the thing is, it was pretty obvious that they devoted some time in their halftime speech to saying, we're not going to let Brandon Green get a good look this second half. And they did a pretty darn good job, because he didn't. And, you know, when he's on the court, Andrew, That guy's there to shoot threes. He's not there to play defense or you know, swing the ball or definitely penetrate, which he's been doing a lot more of. He's there to shoot threes. And when he's not shooting threes, there's an argument that maybe he shouldn't be on the court. And so they did a really good job of stopping him, unfortunately. And that last play of the game where we had a chance to tie, Self said that was a double elevator door, you know, where they just screen like crazy to get him a look. And they fought through all of it and didn't get him a look. And so that was frustrating. But, you know, he's still obviously a big part of this team, and they're going to have to find ways to get him the ball with a shot for three, because he's insane right now. Let's talk a little bit about the WTF of the week. So obviously we talked about that second half versus Oklahoma State. I mean, blowing the lead, getting outscored by 16. It was a whole disaster. But are there any other performances or things that jump out from the week?
You know, a couple things just to kind of play into that Oklahoma State game is that free throws are killing this team. Yeah. We were 10 for 19. Frank missed the front end of a 1-1. If things go different from the free throw line, I think we win the game. If you can point to one thing, I think that's one of them. And I'm not saying we need to go 19 for 19, but this team missed critical free throws in critical situations, and that certainly was a key contributor to why we lost the game. And another one, I think we have to look for Jamari Traylor. 6 turnovers versus Oklahoma State, which is a ridiculous amount for a guy who really doesn't have the ball in his hands a lot. Yeah. You know, where did those turnovers come from? You know, how many times did he get the ball and turn it over versus, you know, other times where he either passed it out or scored? It's got to be a high percentage. We didn't look it up, but 6 turnovers for a guy like Jamari is kind of unacceptable in a game like this. And, you know, he's getting minutes over Cliff, getting minutes over a couple other guys, you know, in those key situations, like during the pressure situations. You got to have a better performance from him if you're going to try to win these games.
I agree. I mean, that is one thing that seems to be driving a lot of KU Twitter fans nuts. You're seeing a lot of hashtag free Cliff mentions out there. Cliff struggled on defense really badly in this game, but he still was efficient on offense. And we play other guys that struggle on defense but are efficient on offense, but for some reason Cliff doesn't. It's kind of one of those things that make you go moments, because, you know, like we just mentioned, Brandon Green's not out there for his defense. Perry Ellis sure ain't out there for his defense, but those guys are, you know, getting a little bit more of a pass. Cliff definitely, I mean, there were a couple times where he just absolutely lost his man. That alley-oop was pretty brutal, where his guy just went right by him. But I still think he's good enough to bring you some things that Jamari can't, and nevertheless, Jamari's getting his minutes. Anyway, the other thing, the WTF, Angie, let's bring up the Frank Mason technical, because at that point, KU was up 11. There was just a couple minutes left in the first half. Frank Mason already had 2 fouls, and if you remember the possession, it was a jump ball that Brandon Green had had a pretty good energy play to get the ball, get the possession, and end up with the ball after the jump ball. And then, you know, as those things happen occasionally, everyone held on too long to the ball, and then the whistle, you know, starts blowing over and over again until everyone kind of lets go. Well, Brandon's kind of stuck over by the Oklahoma State bench and walks away. I mean, he was the first, that was kind of, he showed some, you know, leadership there, just kind of got out of there, walked away, didn't say anything. And Frank, you know, being a teammate, which is good, you know, we kind of ran in to make sure everything was all right, pulled Brandon out of there, but still had to get some words in. He said after the game that he said to the ref and to the players, everybody chill out or something. Like, that's what he said that he, you know, after the game. Who knows what he actually said? Seems like crazy, crazy words to get a technical. But all that said, was the technical kind of the turning point? I mean, from that moment on, Frank Mason played another 20 minutes, had 1 point, 1 assist, and 1 turnover in his final 20 minutes of the game. he was completely out of the game. I mean, he was a mess. I mean, he wasn't doing anything. He wasn't bitch on Frank Mason. I mean, that's what we were kind of expecting from him. And I don't know. It seemed to kind of be a turning point. He got his third foul. Maybe he couldn't be as aggressive. I don't know. What do you think?
Successful when Frank has his fingers all over the game, where it's a Frank Mason type of game. And his fingers and his imprint, his Frank Mason-ness was not on this team in the second half. He's got to take a leadership role. And I don't know if it's because of the technical, but definitely you can see a delineation of here is the game up to this point, and then here is the game after this point. And that's where you draw the line. I don't know if he got rattled. I don't know if he got spooked. But, you know, if we're at our best when he's at his best.
We're at our best when he's all like, "Bitch, I'm Frank Mason." That's what we need. I mean, that's what we need. We need that Frank Mason. We need the redhead Frank Mason. But anyway, we'll see. All right, Andrew, let's take a second here. Pause the podcast. Bring in our good pal, friend of the podcast, Brian Haney. Of course, remember him as voice of the Texas Tech Red Raiders and former KU radio voice for the women's team and the baseball team and several other shows. He's down there in Red Raider land. He's going to join us here for a few minutes. So let's get him on.
Water cooler conversations.
Water cooler conversations.
All right, we are back and we are joined by the voice of the Texas Tech Red Raiders and very good friend of the Jayhawk Talk podcast, making his second, maybe even third appearance here on the podcast. Brian, how the heck are you?
Doing great, Kevin and Andrew. Thanks a lot for having me on, guys.
Of course, of course. How's things going down there in Red Raider land?
You know, it's been good. Obviously, we'd love to have a few more wins than what the Red Raiders have mustered so far this season, but it's the youngest team in the conference by far. Earlier this year, they started the youngest starting lineup in America with four true freshmen and a sophomore. And so you have to head into a season knowing when you've got seven newcomers, five of which are freshmen, that there's going to be growing pains and it's not going to all smoothly fall into place as quickly as you'd like. And that's been the case. But they have been able to beat Iowa State at home. They beat K-State this past Wednesday when Marcus Foster was serving the first game of his suspension. So they caught them at a good time. And I think they've proven, just as they were a year ago, that they're a tough out on their home floor. So other than the fact that they're a young team that on some nights looks overmatched and overwhelmed just based on the lack of experience, and other than the fact that two of their key seven recruits here are now done for the year for one reason or the other, it has been at least an entertaining season because Coach Smith makes this team as competitive as they can be. He's one of the best in the game and coaching guys up and also a man of great integrity. So I'm blessed to get to work for him and work with him, and I think there are very, very bright days ahead for this program.
You know, and it was great to see the Iowa State game with the fans getting into it, rushing the floor, a pretty big victory. What was that win for the program like?
Well, it was huge, and as a KU grad and a guy that still has a big part of his heart back there in Lawrence, it was fun to get about 50 text messages from Kansas friends thanking me for whatever role I played, which was zero, but thanking Tech for helping out the Jayhawks' pursuit of an 11th consecutive Big 12 title by knocking off the Clones. To be honest with you, Andrew, we didn't see it coming. You know, this was an offense and continues to be an offense from a Tech perspective. It's very hit and miss, very sporadic, and at home they've been much better. Some of the veteran guards like Devontae Williams and Todrick Gocher, their numbers are completely skewed in the home game productivity direction versus away. In fact, the stat heading into yesterday's game at Iowa State, Devontae Williams, Tech's top scorer, he averages 22 points per game the last couple of weeks at home, and he scored a combined total of 22 points in five Big 12 road games over the start of a Big 12 play away from home. Tech at home is 80% in terms of winning percentage, 12-3. Away from home, they're 0-9 now, and so pretty easy to see where this young team has struggled the most when they've gotten away from the friendly confines of United Supermarkets Arena. So to answer your question, nobody saw that coming 2 weeks ago, but they did something offensively at the start of the game that they hadn't been doing in recent weeks. And as elementary as it sounds, they were hitting shots, and it became contagious and infectious. And all of a sudden you look up and the team that had struggled to score 14 first half points 1 week earlier versus TCU suddenly was up 19 in the first half on the number 9 team in the country, and they would go on to score 78 points. And prior to that day, they'd been barely averaging north of 50 per game in league play. So all of that to say that when they're hitting and when it becomes a little bit contagious, particularly at home, they have a chance to hang with just about anybody. But as you guys saw up close in Allen Fieldhouse 3 or 4 weeks ago, when guys like Devontae Williams are struggling offensively and all of a sudden they're looking around for answers, because if Rob Turner isn't hitting and D. Will's struggling, who's going to carry us? That's been when you've seen this team struggle. And obviously in Norman earlier this year, they scored a Big 12 record low, 36. And just on Saturday in Ames, it was 38, almost equaling that record. So it's been all or nothing, and that's what made the Iowa State win so surprising. They doubled their scoring output for some other games, but they're hoping for similar results come Tuesday night versus Kansas. We'll see if they're able to get them or not.
All right, well, we will see. I wanted to, while we have you, I know you do a lot with the Big 12 Conference as well. I know you keep tabs pretty closely, probably closer than any of us do. So I want to just get your thoughts, you know, on this conference generally. Is the Big 12 the best conference in the land, as we keep hearing, or is it, you know, just a lot of okay to good teams?
Well, obviously we'll get our answer on that come March. I always judge the stoutness of the league based on how many teams did you get to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament, how many made it to the Elite Eight, did you get somebody, anybody in the Final Four? And last year, who knows, if Niang doesn't break his foot, maybe Iowa State makes it to the Final Four in Arlington, but you didn't have that representative. Kansas didn't go as far as we hoped they would, and so they didn't really have the flag carrier going as far and deep as what the Big 12 needed for the ultimate reputation that it would like to carry as, you know, the best conference around in college basketball. Coach Self would tell you as much. I was listening to him on SVP and Russillo earlier in the week, and he said, man, you know, we are so proud of 10 consecutive Big 12 titles, but we know it's all about the postseason. And so we will put all kinds of emphasis on having these epic regular seasons. And to me, there's no more impressive streak in all of college athletics right now than what Kansas has with 10 consecutive Big 12 titles. But in judging the strength of the conference or any one member institution, I think you have to look at what they're able to do in the postseason. And I know the format makes it tough, because if you run into the wrong matchup on any given night, 5 months of hard work could go up in smoke. But, you know, when people ask me, how do you feel about the strength of the Big 12? I immediately go to the NCAA tournament projections. How many are they currently forecasting the Big 12 to get in? And then I use that as a precursor to say, okay, well, what will they do once they get there? And this is a year where obviously the league, you know, just a couple of weeks ago, had 8 teams projected in. You're not going to get that anymore, because I think K-State's ship has sailed in terms of being a postseason team. And part of that was 6 non-con losses, which made their margin for error in league so small. And when they got off to the hot start at 5-1, you thought maybe they had a chance. But clearly, the wind has come out of the sails now with the Foster suspension and some of the losses that they've taken in recent weeks. So is this a 6-bid league that could get 7? Do they have a solid 7? A lot of that depends on Texas, who's obviously been one of the most disappointing teams in conference, opening at 3-6. Now they're 4-6 after the win on Saturday in Manhattan. But they need to get up off the mat, because we all thought of them as a preseason top 10 team. I went as far as thinking they were co-favorites with Kansas this year, and obviously Iowa State's become the most formidable club in that regard. But what teams like Texas do in the final 4 weeks, West Virginia, who impressed us all in getting off to the 6-2 start, but then you looked a little bit closer and saw that 4 of those 6 wins were against TCU and Texas Tech, and you could see coming the real meat and teeth and gauntlet of their schedule and how they match up once these games get really tough. And we've seen this week with disappointing losses in Norman and at home to Baylor. Were they a little bit of paper tigers? Were we drinking the Kool-Aid too much with all this press Virginia talk over the first month or so? We'll see. I mean, that's a Hall of Fame coach guiding them and Bob Huggins. I'm sure they can still turn things around. But as K-State falls off the bubble, and suddenly we're talking about 7 teams, and as Texas continues to work through its kinks, and maybe West Virginia was a little bit inflated in terms of impression and stoutness early in league play, then you start hearing less and less of this talk of the Big 12 being the toughest conference in college basketball, maybe the best conference. We'll see what it looks like come Selection Sunday. But if they can get seven teams in, and specifically if there are three still alive heading into the second week of the NCAA tournament, if you can get a couple to the Elite Eight, then we can revisit some of those conversations of being the best conference in all the land. Because I'll certainly allow for beating up on each other and some of the self-cannibalization that goes on when you're playing a ranked foe seemingly every night. I mean, think about Texas Tech, for example. They're supposedly one of the weak links. But if this was truly an 8-bid league, like Joe Lenardi was saying it was 2 weeks ago, 16 of Tech's 18 games are against projected tournament teams. That's how tough this league has been. But will it really be that tough when it's all said and done? We'll find out over the final 4 weeks of regular season play. I think they're in the conversation for such things, but you got to finish strong, and then you got to back it up when it matters most, those 3 weeks in March.
You know, I think we expected and we knew that this league would be good, you know, if not great. But is there one thing about the league that surprised you, you know, halfway through? Or maybe one team or one thing we're looking at?
Baylor's clearly surprised me and how good they've been. I didn't see them having this type of success. I thought Oklahoma State would be a little more down than what they've been. It's always going to be a tough game at Gallagher Island. We saw that on Saturday for the Jayhawks just because of the venue and some of the individuals that remain on that team. But both those clubs I thought would take a step back. Obviously, Texas has not been anything close to what I thought they would be, and so they're a negative surprise, I guess. But you know, just the fact that 9 of these 10 teams have been ranked at some point this season, I would not have predicted that. And I know TCU hasn't backed up at all what they did in their perfect non-con run, but clearly it looked like Trent Johnson was finally starting to figure some things out that program, and they've fallen upon some hard times since. But the formidability of this league, 1 through 10, clearly impressed me. When Texas Tech is the youngest team and supposed to be the easiest hole on the back nine, so to speak, and yet they're able to jump up and knock off an Iowa State, it just goes to show you how strong the league is from top to bottom. And I probably would have, had we done this interview back in October, thought that there was going to be more of a clear line and a separation from teams 7 through 10, and that hasn't necessarily been the case. Part of that is one of the co-favorites, Texas, has been more susceptible and beatable than what we thought, and then part of that is just the depth in this league. And I'll tell you this much, guys, this league's ability to reload on a year-in and year-out basis, not just with top-ranked freshmen like the Miles Turners and Kelly Oubres and Cliff Alexanders of the world, but the transfers. And I know you guys know this. I'm preaching to the choir. But there are 6 teams out of 10 that took a transfer that's either starting for them or playing major minutes and is one of the key contributors in their primary rotation. 60%. And some of these guys are amongst the studs of the league that are competing for all Big 12 accolades, either first or second team. It's not just Iowa State that's done this. I know they've got a list that goes 8 deep in the last 4 years of big-time transfers, and there's 2 more getting set to play next year for Fred Hoiberg's team, by the way, one of which I think you're going to be really impressed with. But the point is, because they've been able to reshuffle the deck as much as they have, and no example is better than Bill Self at Kansas and his ability to mix and match new parts every year and get it to fit cohesively. But I look across the board, that's why the Big 12 year in and year out is so competitive. That's why you're talking about 6-7 NCAA tournament teams, because they can reshuffle the deck, and they've done it most recently with transfers in this league, if you look at those 6 teams I'm talking about.
I agree with you, Brian. It's been kind of crazy to see that. Obviously, Hoiberg's been kind of the major player in that world, but you look at Oklahoma, they've got a great transfer. You look down, I mean, Baylor, everywhere. I mean, I think you're right. And KU really hasn't gotten too much into that. And then you look at Tariq Black, who came last year and had a fantastic career in his 1 year with KU, and now off to the NBA. And, things, transfers, it's a nice area to land for a second chance, in some cases a third chance. But, hey, I wanted to get your thoughts on this game tomorrow. Or, I'm sorry, I guess most people are listening to it. It's technically Tuesday, but let's call it tomorrow for the folks that are listening on Monday. What do you think of this matchup? KU obviously coming off a loss. What do you think the game's going to be like?
Well, I'll tell you, nobody in Lubbock is excited to catch Kansas coming off a loss, that's for sure. And clearly, Kansas fans that showed up to the first meeting and saw Tech overwhelmed and outmatched, and prior to their performance in Norman, that was their worst loss of the season. I'm guessing a lot of Kansas fans don't think much of this young Texas Tech team. But like I said, when they're at home, for whatever reason, guys like Todrick Gocher and Devontae Williams, they've just been so much more confident. And I realize that sounds cliche, and a lot of teams are better at home and shoot way better in terms of percentages and all of that. But, I mean, it's staggering to see how much better somebody like Devontae Williams has been at home. So if Tech can come out early and get it clicking on the offensive end, they've proven to be competitive enough defensively, and just with the style of play that Tubby will implement a lot, in taking the air out of the ball, slowing it down, milking the clock inside 10 seconds before they start to attack, in some cases inside five, it shortens the game, it limits the number of possessions, and ultimately it keeps them within striking distance longer than they would be otherwise. And, but the key is you got to make hay offensively, and if they're as stagnant offensively as they've been, like Saturday, for example, in Ames, they'll have no chance. But if they can get a guy like D-Will fired up early and hitting shots, Rob Turner, the senior point guard, if he's able to hit from deep, they'll have a chance, you know, to put a scare into him a little bit. We saw this game a year ago come down to a final shot. Andrew Wiggins, with the first buzzer beater game winner of his career, was in Lubbock, Texas, of all places. That's what Texas Tech is going to be hoping for. It should be a relatively impressive atmosphere. The marketing office at Texas Tech is rolling out several chances. I can't remember the exact number. It's like 100 chances to win $1 million. And it's the scratch-off competition that the fans are going to have a chance to do throughout the game. And so they are rolling out all the stops here to try and get at least 10,000 folks in there and make a real competitive six-man advantage for Texas Tech.
Nice. Well, we look forward to the game. We look forward to catching up with you when you get back up here through Kansas. Have you hit the links at all this year?
Man, I haven't, but if I ever do again up there, you're my man, going back to our TCC days together. And you know what? If I could tell a quick story real fast, not only about Kevin Meckley, one of my favorite guys, but I, as a 16-year-old, was a bag boy at Topeka Country Club and had a chance to, you know, make some great relationships through that job. But my favorite day ever working there, in addition to the days when I got to hit the range with Mr. Meckley, was the day when Roy Williams and Dean Smith came through Topeka Country Club. And I say this because we're recording this on the day that, unfortunately, Coach Smith passed away, one of the men of the highest integrity in the college basketball coaching industry. In fact, I think he set the bar on integrity. And his career should be judged based on the lives he touched, far greater than the 879 wins he racked up. But on that day, this would have been 1996, Topeka, Kansas, Roy Williams and Dean Smith played at TCC, and I got to clean both their clubs. Roy tipped me $5, and Dean tipped me $2, probably more of a generational thing than it was reflective of the job I did, because I probably put a little extra elbow grease into Coach Smith's gloves. But I kept that $5 bill and those two ones to this day. They hang in my office here in Lubbock, Texas. And the point in telling you that isn't that I made $7 off of North Carolina coaches. It's to tell you that the interaction that I had with those two guys, and Coach Smith in particular, a Topeka native like me. In fact, we grew up on the same street in Topeka. Huh. He was a Trojan, I was a Charger, separated by about 60 years. But the way he treated me is the way he lived his life and his coaching career. Whether you were a contemporary like a Mike Krzyzewski or the scrawny, pimply-faced kid cleaning his golf clubs, he treated you with the same amount of respect and attention. Maybe didn't tip you as well as Roy did, but that's the way he lived his life and coached like he did. So on this day that we remember a legend, a legendary Jayhawk and Tar Heel, just a legendary human being, a guy who used his platform for the greater good, I think back to the way he touched my life, even as a young 16-year-old kid in Topeka, Kansas. So there's my golfing story for you today. And clearly, I'm thinking about Coach Smith in a much better place, smiling down on all of us, a guy who really leaves a legacy behind. We should all be inspired to try to chase.
That's a great story. That's funny. I remember seeing Roy there, you know, several times when I was growing up, and I never knew Dean came too. So that's cool. I'm glad you got to experience that. Great story. Thank you very much, Brian. Of course, we will follow Brian on Twitter there at B Haney, HANNI. Good luck on the call down on Tuesday, and we will hopefully catch up with you very soon. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you guys so much, Kevin and Andrew. We'll see you in Kansas City for the Big 12 tournament in a few weeks.
Sounds
hey, thanks,
great.
Brian.
All right, take care, Brian.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
All right. Well, thanks again to Brian for coming on. That was awesome. Great story about Dean Smith there at TCC. I know exactly where he's talking about. I was a bag boy at one point in my life, so that's pretty darn cool. Andrew, what do you say we take a look around the Big 12 for a minute here?
Y'all ready for this? Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
How about playing a little defense? You ever heard of that one, Stan?
I think there's a couple big storylines from this week. Obviously, Brian touched on it, but the suspension of Marcus Foster and Malik Harris at K-State, does that kind of spell the downfall of K-State for this season? I mean, they were kind of on the fence there, maybe on the bubble a little bit with some good wins early. Now dropped a couple, not so sure. What do you think?
I think they're off the bubble now. I think it's going to be incredibly difficult for them to even get back into consideration for the tournament, let alone the tournament itself. Just from what we know, Marcus Foster and Malik Harris were suspended indefinitely. They've missed the past two games. They missed the Texas game this past weekend, and then the week before they missed the Texas Tech game, where they got blown out there in Lubbock. We don't know how long the suspension is, and I think that's a problem. We don't know what he did. But I think if it was something more certain about, you know, he's gone for two games because of this, but because we don't know it's indefinite, I think that means that it's just up to Bruce Weber as to when he comes back. And I think that what this tells us, and I don't know any specific information, but just judging on things that have happened the past couple months and then leading up to this, I think the problem is Marcus Foster. And when your best player is your worst player off the court, your team's not going to do very well. There's lots of rumors about what this has happened. I know you talked to some folks in Manhattan regarding this team. What did you hear?
Yeah, I think your intuition there is right. I think there's some problems off the court. A lot of it is just attitude. A lot of it is just little things going on. I don't want to get into, you know, all the things that I heard, but you can kind of paint a picture that Marcus Foster went to a lot of these camps in the off season, started here, and he was pretty darn good, and maybe didn't devote his attention in the right places coming back for his sophomore season. And I think Bruce Weber has shown he's going to be kind of a hard ass when it comes to those types of things, and he thinks it's bringing the team down. He thinks it's bringing other players down. You know, you look around a couple of guys who have really, you know, paid their dues and Gibson and Nina Williams and some of these other guys who have been around a little bit, kind of sucks for them. You know, you got Gibson a senior year trying to, you know, get to the tournament one more time. And you got some, you know, young kid who's coming in and, you know, not putting his priorities in the right place for a team that really needs him. I can see how that could be frustrating. Obviously, you know, the way that he's suspending him, knowing indefinitely, I don't know what that means. I mean, it might mean for another game. It might mean for the rest of the season. And if that's the case, I think it's pretty obvious that that they're probably going to not end up going to the tournament, which is frustrating for them because they had, on paper, a pretty darn good team coming into the season.
I think you're right. But another team that's pretty interesting that's kind of came into form this past week is West Virginia and what to think about West Virginia. Just for a little background, they are 6-4. In the conference, but they're 2-4 in the conference against teams not named Texas Tech and TCU. Are they a legitimate contender here? And more specifically against us, you know, they can be whatever they are, and we can say that they're 2-4 versus, you know, the meat of the Big 12, but, you know, they are a press Virginia team. And we can't beat a press to save our lives. So maybe it's, you know, more beneficial to them that they haven't played us twice. What do you make of this Bob Huggins team?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think that they're going to be tough, you know, a tough matchup against us. But at the same time, you see them just get absolutely destroyed two games in a row. And you go, man, I mean, what are they? What, I agree, it's kind of a weird team. But I think we've seen more the truth of West Virginia this past week than we saw early in the season. I think they're a team that can can ramp up on the defensive end, and it, when they're turning people over, they can beat anybody. But when they're not, and it's not working, you know, it's kind of like that 40 minutes of hell type of thing. If it's not working, you got a chance to get destroyed, because people are beating your press. They're scoring easy buckets. They're making shots. Your half-court offense, I think, remains a problem for them. And if we can make it a half-court game like that, I think it's going to be I think we'll have a pretty good chance to beat them. In fact, maybe even beat them both times. Obviously, we saw Baylor go in and just crush them in Morgantown. So, I don't know. I think their true colors are a little bit more what we've seen recently than maybe what we saw early. But still not a great matchup for KU if we're turning the ball over.
All right, let's go into our favorite segment, the power rankings. The power lies on their side.
All right, Andrew, I think we can both land on the fact that TCU and Tech are going to be toward the bottom.
Right, and I think that we need to say that this week we're going to do it in how we think the league's going to finish out, not necessarily how they're playing right now. So like those are probably the bottom. So Texas Tech, TCU, so 10 and 9, but it gets a little interesting from there. Let's talk about number 8. You think it's K-State?
I think that's a good bet. I mean, especially with these suspensions. I mean, it's hard to rank them because they've beat Oklahoma State. And you know, if you start looking team by team, or, you know, comparing two teams together instead of how they rack up against the conference. But I think there's an argument there. What about you?
I think that that's an easier answer than we're making it out to be. I think it's definitely Texas, or definitely K-State. Okay. But it gets more interesting, 7 through 4. Yeah. Let's talk about a couple teams. Oklahoma State, Texas, West Virginia, Baylor. Those are all pretty good teams, and it's kind of bad that you have to put one at number 7. It makes them seem so low and not as a good of a team. But who do you put 4 through 7?
I think I'm going to put Oklahoma State 7 and Texas 6. The reason I say that is I think Texas has some wins in them down the stretch here. I've been on Texas all year thinking they're going to turn it around. They really haven't, but I keep thinking they will, and I'm going to keep riding that train. Oklahoma State has been very good at home and mediocre kind of elsewhere. They've had some good wins. They've obviously played pretty well against us, but I still think Texas is a better team, and I'm just going to keep riding that train. What about you?
I think that's the order I put them in, too. And just moving on, 5-4-3, I think I go West Virginia 5, Baylor 4.
Man, that's tough. So I think Baylor is really starting to scare me a little more and more as a team that, you know, could end up. I mean, if we're talking about just final, you know, standings, I guess I could get on board with that because they're 6-4. West Virginia 6-4. I'll get on board with that.
All right, and then 3-2-1. I think if we're both going to pick KU number 1, which we are, correct?
Yes.
Comes down to 2 and 3, Oklahoma or Iowa State. I think that's going to be quite the race.
I've got Oklahoma finish second.
Okay, I think I have Iowa State finishing second.
Okay, so that'll we'll be see. Interesting.
If anything, we know that the Big 12 is still up in the air. But let's move on to the matchups for this next week. On Monday, we have Oklahoma State at Baylor. And I think the biggest matchup of the week is Iowa State at Oklahoma. Definitely be one to keep an eye out as those teams are at the top of the Big 12. Tuesday, of course, is our game at Texas Tech down there in Lubbock. Wednesday, we have K-State at West Virginia, TCU at Texas. And then Saturday, Baylor comes to Lawrence. OU goes to K-State. West Virginia goes to Iowa State. Oklahoma State goes to TCU. And Texas Tech goes to Texas. Any favorites stick out there?
I will be watching that Iowa State at OU game, cheering, I think, for Oklahoma at this point. And then those two will be both at a couple behind KU with another loss from Iowa State. But I mean, KU still has to keep winning. I mean, that's kind of where we're at here, because those teams still have a chance to catch up if KU drops another couple that they shouldn't. But I think that's going to be a great game, that Iowa State Oklahoma game. And then I don't know, K-State at West Virginia could be interesting. You got OSU At Baylor also on Monday, which is going to be a fun game. I think that'll be a good test for Baylor. We saw Baylor just absolutely rock West Virginia, and then Oklahoma State coming to town, see how they react after that win. But it's going to be a good week.
I think so, too. So let's talk about our games a little more specifically. We talked about the Tuesday game with Texas Tech a lot with Brian, but let's just go into it a little bit more. The previous meeting in Lawrence, KU won 86-54, quite the lopsided margin. But as Brian mentioned, Texas Tech is a little dangerous at home. You know, they've won their last two home games. You know, they beat Iowa State by 5, and then they beat an undermanned K-State, but they beat them by 17 points, which is nothing to slouch at. They did follow up that K-State victory with a loss to Iowa State by 33 up there in Ames. So kind of an up-and-down season for the Red Raiders. Kevin, give me a prediction.
I say KU wins 73-60.
Okay, I say 70-60.
Okay.
Yeah, that's literally what I had in my head as you were saying okay. I was hoping you weren't going to do the exact same as me. All right, and then let's fast forward to next Saturday. Baylor comes into Lawrence. You know, first game of the Big 12 season, we went to Waco and won the game at the end, 56-55. You know, Baylor technically right now is ranked higher than us in the KenPom rankings. Baylor is at 10 and we're at 12, which is, you know, pretty interesting. You know, they've got a pretty balanced offense. Kenny Cherry really is the general that runs that offense. But, you know, they're balanced and they have four players who average 10 points a game with Cherry, Prince, Rico Gathers, and, of course, Royce O'Neal. And we know that Rico Gathers is quite the rebounding machine. What do you think about this matchup in Lawrence?
You know, I actually think that this is one that we're going to win and maybe pretty well. I mean, Baylor obviously scares me a little bit, but I'm going to be at this game. You know, my wife, you and I went to that Iowa State game, and Lindsay and I were going to watch it at home. We had plans. Her family was going to come over, and then you texted me. You're like, hey, want to go to the game? And so I got a little – I had to do some negotiation, and so I said, how about – we go to that Baylor game. I'll buy you a ticket for Valentine's Day because it's Valentine's Day.
Oh, that's adorable.
And
that's
so
it's
isn't that a great Valentine's Day present? You know, the gift of Kansas basketball.
It's the gift that keeps on giving.
So we're going to the game. So obviously it's going to be a good one. I don't know. You know, the matchup is interesting. They are just a ridiculous rebounding. I think they're fourth best in the country. Gathers is just, I don't even know how many rebounds he has now, but he's averaging like 13 or 14 rebounds. But I still think we'll have a good game there. And I got us winning by 6 or 7. I think Baylor's going to be, I think they're going to win. We're going to win the game, but it'll be a decent game until the end.
I think we win by 14.
Okay. I like your
February 14th. That's what I'm going for.
I like that. All right. The love will be in the air though. So I will be in the building. Andrew, we should probably mention, at one point we thought we were going to do our Jayhawk Talk watch party for this Tuesday game at Tech. We decided that game just doesn't, it's not that interesting. Let's do a fun one. So we decided we're going to push it back to the K-State game, the at K-State game. I think that one will be a little more fun. It'll be Monday, February 23rd, the game. So that's 2 weeks from tomorrow, for 2 weeks from Monday. And we're still working out the location, so we're going to open it up actually to you guys, our listeners. If there's a place you want us to do the watch party, if you have a connection maybe to a bar or restaurant that you work at or know somebody and would think that it'd be kind of fun to host some folks for the KU K-State watch party, shoot us a message on Twitter or reach out to us at Jayhawk Talk or at Sherlock Hoops. And we will follow up on it, see if we can get something put together. But we will have a location nailed down by next week's podcast. So watch for that. But put it on your calendars for the Jayhawk Talk Watch Party in Kansas City at some local bar or restaurant. We will figure out here this week.
You know, before we get out of here, I think we've got a couple new iTunes reviews. Do you have those to read to us? Some of them
I
were
do.
Kind
Here's
of funny.
The first one. From our friend Jayhawk ATX, Andrew is the best gift of the world of sports to come out of Garden City since Victor Ortiz. I don't know if I agree with that.
I agree with that. Although, like, there's not a lot of difference in age between us. So, like, from one thing to the next, like, it's, you know, not that big of a deal. But Victor Ortiz, Garden City's finest.
That's true. And then from W_W, Jayhawk Talk should not be trailing the Kentucky Sports Radio podcast on the iTunes rankings. Jayhawk Nation has to step up its listening game. Kentucky Sports Radio has, like, I don't know, 200,000 followers or 200,000 listeners on their radio show. Basically, everyone in Kentucky listens to that that radio show or podcast. There's not much else going on.
Well, they're a radio show, like a legit radio show, right, that they turn into a podcast. So they've got a little more resources than we do. I wouldn't say our coffers are too deep.
Right. But, you know, we appreciate every single one of you that listens in. So forget those guys. Anything else, Andrew, before we get out of here on this fine Sunday? I got to get outside. It's nice out.
Well, it's the dog days of the Big 12, but these are oftentimes the most fun games. Time to put some separation between us and the rest of the league and get on our way to this 11th championship.
We will see you next time on the Jayhawk Talk podcast. Thanks again to our friend Brian Haney for coming on. Hopefully a 2-0 week is upon us. We'll catch you next time. And rock, Jock. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks, baby. I tried to tell them every time we on the court. I tried to tell them that we never coming up short. I tried to tell them that we came here to get the win. I tried to tell them that they should never let us in. They say that we the best, but I say we the greatest. That's why they try to knock us down and always seem to hate us. That's why they talk about us. They know they can never fade us. It's tradition and that Kansas pride that has truly made us. They know just how we feel. They know at Allen Field that we gon' keep it real. Shout out to Bill. This for them fans that waited off in them long lines, camped out before the games, and they stayed a long time. Every dollar that we spend just to watch our team win, on a Jayhawk shirt or a new clean Benz with a sticker on the back with the K and the U. Uh-huh, yeah, baby, that'll make you say, ooh. We at the top of the top, just like we should be. Started from the bottom, thanks to what James could see. Dr. Naismith made a game for man, changed lives for the players, and did the same for the fans. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. Hawks. And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks, baby. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks, baby. All them years that we've been cheering, everything that we've been hearing, all them spreads that we've been clearing, never been no team we fearing, and look how Bill got us steering. All them tournaments appearing with no team that's interfering. Nine times get to cheering with them banners held high and the crowd going wild. Night before the Final Four, you can't even sleep now. Yeah, we at the peak now, we can't even leap down. March Madness, man, we've been waiting weeks now. If you a Hawks fan, go ahead and hold them ones high. Shout out to the boosters showing love and the alumni. I'm speaking for the fans, even though I'm just one guy. We appreciate the love, love won't run dry. Imagine the state of Kansas with no Jayhawks. That's like having no streets but trying to jaywalk. They see us as support and we see them on the court. So we keep it loud and do our best so we don't come up short. We win together and we lose together. But win or lose, we still booze together. Struggles in my life will change me as a man. But one thing that'll never change, I'll be a Jayhawk fan. I ain't even gotta really say it. This one for the fans, that's why I made it. March Madness, here we can't be faded. Rock Chuck Jayhawk in your faces. I ain't even gotta really say it. This one for the fans, that's why I made it. March Madness, here we can't be faded. Rock Chuck Jayhawk in your faces. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans.
my J-Hawk fans, for my J-Hawks, Hawks. And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks, baby.
Andrew, would the club go up on a Tuesday?
No, because everybody has to work on Wednesday. Like, mm-hmm. The club goes up on Friday. Well, Thursday sometimes, because people take Friday off and don't take Friday seriously. But if the club's going up on Tuesday, that means that no one's going to work on Wednesday. And if no one goes to work on Wednesday, the productivity of this country will just go down. Like, China will surpass us in 2 minutes. Like, the club's just got to go up on Friday and Saturday for the sake of the country.
If it's not going up, what if it – is it going up? I mean, is that different than just regular
that's
up?
That's even worse.
That's worse? That's
worse.
So,
because that means it's like I consider – there's a difference between up and up. The second one is more.
That's more up?
Is like up plus one.
That's farther
and
up.
If there's up plus one, then like it's going to be even less productivity on that Wednesday.
So it's like the speaker's going up to 11.
Yeah. That's like it's a little extra boost.
So when the club's going up.
A little nitroglycerin in the engine, you know, a little extra firepower.
Got it. Okay.